You're listening to KGNU. I'm Alexis Kenyon. On today's A Public Affair, I speak with Karen Lee Ashcraft, a professor of communications at the University of Colorado Boulder. Ashcraft, who self-identifies as a former right-wing populist, will be speaking about her new book at the Boulder Bookstore tonight. It's called Wronged and Dangerous: Viral Masculinity and the Populist Pandemic. Karen Lee Ashcraft, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Ashcraft, you start your book out by kind of digging into populism of the right and anti-populism of the left and tension between those two, and a thread that you call aggrieved manhood. Tell me about how all of these concepts relate and what they are.
Sure. Yeah. In general, populism is like a movement that comes from the majority, that's of the people, an uprising, right? In this case, I think populism is used somewhat inappropriately, or it's misleading as a term. And I'm trying to point out that it's actually a gendered anger, no matter who's doing it, that it is about aggrieved manhood. Now, anti-populism is that kind of elitist response, which is like, ooh, that's gross. That's disgusting. Look at the people being crass, right? Or politically incorrect. And that can grate on me a bit because I have, you know, the experience growing up of kind of seeing the quote unquote elite and feeling shamed or belittled by that response.
I actually wanted to ask you about that. You grew up in a religious family. How did that inform your book and some of the concepts you develop?
So I grew up in the religious right, and I was, well, my family was extremely conservative and anti-feminist and kind of responding to many of the social movements of the 60s and 70s. And then all through the 80s and into the 90s, we were quite active in right-wing politics. It gave me an up-close, intimate view of the emotional dynamics related to gender and families that play out in those movements. I think in a lot of critique of the far right that comes from the left, my colleagues and such, I often sense an anti-populist kind of strain, and that's what I meant when I said that can grate on me to some extent as somebody who's familiar with some of those ways of thinking. So that's kind of how it influenced the book.
I feel like I can understand both of those feelings that you described. I can understand why people would feel condescended, and I can also understand why people would be condescending about populism.
Sure. Yeah, I mean part of what I think makes the voice of this book unique is that I'm attempting to navigate that. There is something to be concerned about here. And one doesn't need to talk down to it in order to address it, right? Both of those things are true. So it might help if I lay out like the three kind of big points of the book. Would that be useful?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I would say first that in all the conversations we're having right now about the rise of the far right around the world or the rise of right-wing populism, gender is a consistently overlooked factor. People notice it, but they act like it's a sideshow, like it's kind of peripheral. I argue that aggrieved manhood, and I can explain what that means, is actually what is driving this far-right turn around the world. It is an infectious feeling that can attach to all kinds of local circumstances and cross-cultural borders. And that is what's giving like the animation to right-wing populist movements. So gender is far more important than we realize. And then the third point is that aggrieved manhood, from my perspective, is actually not so much a political threat or like a threat to democracy. I'm not saying it is or isn't, but what I'm saying is what we should be most concerned about is how aggrieved manhood is a public health problem. And I can give you all kinds of examples of this, but the threat is more existential than a threat to democracy or to a political system. It is actually a threat to people's lives and to planetary health. And that is a way in which we can have empathy from the side, to return to our conversation from the beginning.
So when you're talking about it being a public health issue, and you kind of bring in this idea of about hierarchy and about othering, and that's where this aggrieved manhood becomes problematic, because it's about taking care of one thing over another thing. But this is such a hard and abstract thing to identify, really, because it's about manhood, but it's also not about manhood or gender really at all, especially when you start talking about public health or climate change or something like that. Can you explain more about that?
Yes. Yeah. So I liked how you put that. Aggrieved manhood is basically the conviction that manliness, masculinity, real men are under attack, right? That has to be addressed and restored in order to set society right. It can be felt, this feeling, aggrieved manhood, by anyone. Take a look at Heidi Gannell's recent campaign, if we want to think locally. How did Heidi Gannell exemplify aggrieved manhood? By framing herself as a pissed off mom. It's a vivid example, as is Lauren Boebert. We have many local examples of how women can also take this feeling on. And perhaps that's what makes it seem populist to us, that men and women do it, right? Now, when I say it's a public health problem, what I mean is that the culture wars that are being fought in the name of aggrieved manhood to restore manly entitlement are actually destroying the planet. So, for example, climate denialism, this has a really strong connection to manly grievance, right? The fossil fuel industry, eating more meat, rolling coal. All of these things are kind of manly displays that, like, it's my planet and I can do what I want, right? And when that scales up to candidates who are voting against climate policy, responsible climate policy, it's actually threatening the planet. Similarly, most mass and school shootings, we know, though this is rarely discussed, that manly grievance, feelings of aggrieved manhood, are almost always involved. Lives are at stake, right? When anti-masking was a thing, and not only were men more likely to do it, but aggrieved manhood was sort of the sentiment with which the mask was ripped off. Think about Trump on the balcony. Also, putting lives at risk, right? Those are just three concrete examples of the ways in which these gender displays are actually health threats. The final one I would mention is gun suicide. Being a white man puts you at a higher risk for gun suicide. And that too, we can trace back to feelings of aggrieved manhood. So the point is that it's a public health risk for everyone, including the men and boys who take it on. What I'm trying to do in this book is give people the vocabulary and the tools to be able to see this common denominator, this through line across things that appear on the surface to have little to do with gender, but are driven by, motivated by. All you have to do is scratch the surface, and that feeling begins to pour out. And that is a through line across so many confounding events, from insurrections to climate denial to mass shootings to all of this anti-LGBTQ, anti-CRT, anti-trans bills. All of these culture wars have this as their through line. It's really like something we need to start calling by name. And the phrase far right or right wing populism doesn't do it justice. It's not precise enough.
Do you think, how is this an idea that won't just become divisive or won't just become another cancel culture like complaint? You know,
do you mean my ideas in the book, the argument about aggrieved manhood?
Yeah, about the aggrieved masculinity there's another word that you use.
I use manly synonyms. Grievance. Manly grievance or aggrieved manhood, aggrieved masculinity. Yeah, just trying to people talk about white grievance, for example, And almost always when they are talking about that, especially like the Tucker Carlson variety, they're really talking about white manly grievance, right? It has a gender specificity to it. So yeah, those are all kind of synonyms for the same thing. Now, how does it become not just another divisive? This is why I spend so much time in the book trying to clarify and avoid anti-populism. This is not another polarizing argument. It is actually an argument that is attempting to show everyone's stake from all sides of the aisle in calming down or flattening the curve, if you will, of aggrieved manhood. It is something mass shootings, climate issues, these things affect all of us, regardless of our politics. So we don't really need to argue about the ideologies involved. We need to address the spread of the feeling. And it is in everyone's best interest to do so. That is why I will underscore time and again, nothing about this argument is against men and boys. White men and boys as well face real challenges, but aggrieved masculinity as a response hurts everyone.
Can you tie together how lateral empathy helps you to identify people who hold convictions that you strongly don't agree with?
Absolutely. Can I give you a concrete example that might help?
Yes.
On everyone's radar who follows such things is Andrew Tate these days. So Andrew Tate is a classic kind of most recent example of a poster boy for online misogyny. Has made, allegedly, millions of dollars enlisting young men and boys in his Hustlers University, where he teaches them how to do all kinds of sexist, et cetera, stuff. He recently baited climate activist, see how this comes together, climate denialism, Greta Thunberg, and said, "I have 33 vehicles with enormous emissions. Please send me your email address so I can share with you a full report of my climate destruction." And Greta responds, "I would love to receive that list. Please send it to smalldenergy@getalife.com. So everybody has a laugh at this, right? And it's kind of a comeuppance, sweet justice. He ends up, because of his viral response, this kind of rant that he went on, he ends up getting arrested. And now he's under investigation for various things. So, okay, good internet comedy, perhaps. But this is an example to me of the kind of thing we need to take seriously and where lateral empathy comes in. So imagine the young boy who maybe doesn't have the funds to join Hustlers University, but has been downloading those videos and gets fed one after another and begins to feel hyped up, chest bulging. I'm a man too. Maybe I'll go work out. I want that luxury lifestyle, right? He's getting gripped by the feeling. Now, we don't need to argue with him and tell him what's wrong with it. We need to understand how it's entering his body. And it's entering his body through this routine exposure to the feeling, through the communication circuitry that is like participatory platforms in the social media age. That's what we need to have empathy for. How is that happening? And how can we slow the spread of that feeling and young men and boys' exposure to it? Does that make sense as an example?
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm going. It's like we talk all the time about misinformation and slowing that spread and combating people getting bad facts, right? But people are also at a more insidious and off the radar of consciousness level getting infected with bad feeling. And that is something we don't address at all and don't really have the tools to do it. And that's kind of what I study. So, yeah.
What do you mean by bad feeling?
When I say it's a bad feeling, what I mean is that it may be very real to the people who feel it. It is real to them, but it is not true. It does not reflect the current state of the world, and it is causing harm around the very problems that it claims to address. Aggrieved manhood would be an example of a destructive feeling. And so what makes it more insidious than bad ideology, troubling ideology or bad facts, is that you're not always aware of why you're doing it. It feels like this idea is yours. It feels like it comes from me, and you're not aware of where the feeling is coming from.
You're listening to A Public Affair on KGNU. Today, I'm speaking with Professor Karen Lee Ashcraft about her new book, Wronged and Dangerous, Viral Masculinity and the Populist Pandemic. Karen, so one of the things that you start to unpack in your book is how this common thread of aggrieved masculinity runs through domestic violence and that becoming a precursor to gun violence or even mass shootings. I mean, why do you think that there isn't more of a discussion around this?
Gloria Steinem, in the wake of the Columbine shooting, wrote a piece called Supremacy Crimes that tackles precisely this question. And that was before it exploded into the phenomenon that it is now. And one of the things that she points out is when straight white men or boys are involved, we tend to see them as individuals first. If it were people of color or white women who were perpetrating these crimes, we would point to gender, race, perhaps class right away. But when white men are involved, we tend to see them as lone wolves, as broken people, anything but having to do with gender. I am consistently amazed that the one pattern that is the most pervasive, over 95% of mass shooters are men, and not just men, even in cases where, for example, it's women. I can give you a couple of examples. It's still about aggrieved manhood. Look, you may not know like the particular motives, but look at, like you say, the histories of domestic violence, anti-feminist rhetoric, and homophobic, anti-Semitic, like the whole package. And it's shocking that we don't talk about this. So what I've described as critical feeling would be something we could add to the gun sense and mental health conversations. We should also be having a conversation about gender and how to flatten the curve of aggrieved manhood. That's a great question. Thank you.
Well, I'm curious about your thoughts about the recent Club Q massacre. I mean, the alleged suspect had a history of domestic violence, which the police didn't think was enough to enforce any type of red flag law. And then after the shooting, his lawyers announced he identifies as non-binary. Do you think the concept of aggrieved masculinity still plays into this scenario?
So I think for the general public, when we get into some of those individual details about, well, what was this person's motive, that it has a tendency to distract us from that common thread. And that's the paper trail that my research was focused on, is establishing the common thread that in nearly every one of these cases, evidence of manly grievance abounds. And that is what I was at pains to detail. I do want to mention the Club Q shooting is an interesting case where people were initially saying, oh, another mass shooting. But as soon as it came out that the shooter identified as non-binary, or at least in court documents, they wanted to be referred to as non-binary, immediately people were like, oh, okay, so it must be something else. I mean, whatever we may not know about this shooter, we do know the comments from his parents. We do know that his mother was extremely concerned for their masculinity, and the father also made comments that suggested a history of perhaps, I don't want to speculate on this, but pressure applied to the shooter around masculinity. Anyone, women, non-binary people, can feel aggrieved manhood. And that is a really important point, that the Club Q shooting is part of this pattern, regardless of who the shooter is.
So also in your book, you discuss the pattern and link between white supremacist tendencies going hand in hand with what you refer to as viral masculinity. And in discussions, what's the difference between aggrieved and toxic masculinity? Is there a difference? And why use one term over another.
Yeah, that is so important. The first thing people will do is say, okay, is this just another argument about toxic masculinity? No, it is not. I want to be very clear about that. It is not a synonym for toxic masculinity. Aggrieved manhood is a backlash to conversations about toxic masculinity. It is a response to those conversations. And it's a very specific development that is about feeling. Toxic masculinity is more about ideologies and norms of manhood. Aggrieved manhood is a feeling that toxic masculinity is BS. How about that?
Well, why did you decide on the words aggrieved manhood?
Good question. Sociologist Michael Kimmel, in his book called Angry White Men, back in, I think, 2014 or something, he did another edition in 2017, used the term aggrieved entitlement. And I was attempting to draw on and extend his work while calling out the specific masculinity of it. So I was kind of the progression of what other folks have done and taking that further.
What do you think Kimmel would say about aggrieved manhood?
Michael Kimmel is one of the leading masculinity scholars in the U.S., who is a complicated figure because there was a kind of Me Too incident charge surrounding him. So he is largely quiet these days. But his book in 2017, when he reprinted it in kind of relation to the Trump phenomenon, he described that as, what do you call it, a valedictory lap around the field, like the last gasp of white male angst. And I must say, on that count, could not have been more wrong. And that is what this book is trying to explain. How did we go from thinking this was an outdated, outmoded way of thinking to it being extremely enticing to young men and boys around the world? And I offer an explanation for that I think is compelling in the book.
Can you sum that up?
Sure. What Michael Kimmel did not account for in his attention to things like outrage media, conservative talk radio, the rise of all those sorts of things in the 80s and 90s, he did not account for Web 2.0 participatory platforms kind of post-2010. This is when we began to see manly grievance take off online and the resulting culture wars that only really came to the surface in the public eye with like Gamergate in 2014, and then a little bit with the alt-right in the Clinton-Trump election in 2016. But most people seem not to be aware of the extent to which online misogyny, which is known by people who study it as the manosphere, is a force in the world. It is like the incubator, the supercharger of aggrieved manhood. And that is how it's spreading. So,
yeah, interesting. Well, is there anything else that I missed or that you think that you want to add?
I might just say, if there is a call to action here, it's to start noticing aggrieved manhood as a through line in seemingly disconnected events, ranging from resistance to COVID measures, anti-masking, to election and climate denial, to mass shootings, to gun suicide. Look for aggrieved manhood. Start calling it by name.
I've been speaking with Karen Lee Ashcraft, a professor of communications at the University of Colorado Boulder. Ashcraft, who self-identifies as a former right-wing populist, will be speaking about her new book at the Boulder Bookstore tonight. It's called Wronged and Dangerous: Viral Masculinity and the Populist Pandemic. Karen, thank you so much for talking with me today. I appreciate it.
It has been a pleasure. Thank you.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Thank you. 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver.